So if this looks like a canned talk, it is because it's a canned talk. It's what I plan to give at other places as well. But I'll certainly customize it as we go along. So the first thing I want to say, this title, Adventures in Entomophagy, that's the fancy word for today. It basically means bug eating. You know, entomology is the study of insects, and entomophagy means eating insects. So you can impress your friends. You know, what did you do up at Holden Village? You don't want to say, well, I ate a bug. That sounds kind of rednecky, I think. But you could say, I engaged in entomophagy. And then everyone would say, oh, really? Did you know? And you could say, yeah, I ate a bug and tell them that way. Okay. And when we're talking about bug eating, technical difficulties. Yeah, there we go. When we're talking about bug eating, I don't mean this kind of bug eating. This is actually a diorama made by a man named Richard Boscarino, who does all these great still lifes. He has a pentagon. I don't know if I should say this in this crowd, but he also has the Nativity and the Last Supper.
Bugs?
Yeah, and these are all dead cockroaches. He's pretty crazy, but he's also a jeweler. So what I really mean is this kind of bug eating. And this is a shot from Cambodia, where they actually sell tarantula spiders as snacks. Now, this in Cambodia is a fairly recent thing. It's not like a historic tradition. It actually has to do with all the instability they went through in the 1980s and 90s. But nowadays, it's a tourist opportunity to eat bugs. It's actually kind of amazing because here's Mexico, and no, we're not looking at lima beans or peanuts.
Or chilies.
These are all grasshoppers that have been harvested from the wild in Oaxaca, Mexico. They're roasted and seasoned with chili and lime.
Yum.
Yeah, exactly. And they are really good, I'm here to tell you.
Crunchy and all that?
Crunchy and actually kind of spicy. They're kind of like beer snacks. If you're watching the Super Bowl and you have some beers in a bowl of these, you're in great shape. Now, I want to show these pictures to you all because it's shocking to us. It's kind of ridiculous. 80% of the world's cultures eat bugs.
Yeah.
Whether you're in Australia or Africa or Central America, South America, Mexico, Southeast Asia, and so on, 80% of the world's cultures. And even the Native American, traditionally the Native American diet included in insects. We like to think of the Plains Indians as riding around shooting bison, but in actuality, they are also harvesting grasshoppers. That's 1.9 billion people, by the way. Now, sometimes I see that figure rounded up, you know, for the convenience of the newspapers, 2 billion people. Well, that's adding 100,000 million people. That's nice that they're rounding up. Okay, but so much for dissing the newspaper. Here's the world's most famous bug eater.
Yes,
John the Baptist lived on locusts and honey. I know there's some scholarly debate. No, he lived on locust pods. That's, you know, the tree. Well, no, that's not true. He lived on locusts, the grasshoppers. He was kind of the original back to nature guy.
Uh-oh.
Yeah, right, exactly. Maybe.
Are you using the right scroll?
Oh, yeah, right. Hello. I'm sorry. We seem to be experiencing technical difficulties. Okay. The real question is, when did we stop eating grasshoppers? You know, if you read the Bible, it says the locust is actually kosher. It's in Leviticus with the kosher rules. So when did our culture decide to stop? Well, it's interesting, you know, in lots of cultures they continued or even started, like you saw with Cambodians, in recent times. I believe, while I've never seen this actually written down in fact other than my own fact, I believe that the advent of agriculture in our culture pretty much killed the idea of eating bugs. Mm-hmm. You know, insects are the only animals on our planet that are in direct competition with people for food. Now, the deer here might qualify, but I don't think worldwide. If you're a wheat farmer and locusts are swarming, you're in big trouble. That's the end of the line for that crop. And eating insects, admitting that they're worth anything, is actually like sleeping with the enemy. So we have in our culture a real lot of bug bashing that's not shared by other cultures. You know, get that thing out of the house, it's gross and disgusting. If you have one cockroach, you better call the exterminator. All this, you know, spraying the perimeter of your house to kill spiders, all this stuff that we do routinely because of our dislike of insects, is not shared by other cultures. In Japan, for example, kids have baby beetles that they raise. When the beetle dies, they actually have a little funeral for it, bury it outside. You know, here someone would be screaming, "Don't you bring that into my house!" So we do kind of go extreme. And historically, I just love this. This is a publication called Why Not Eat Insects? It's written by Vincent Holt, an Englishman in the 1880s. And this was his big thing. If you think about it, in the 1880s, there was a whole series of food insecurities. The potato famines, there was a series of famines. Actually, the final one around Holt's time wasn't even that bad by comparison, but people had such strong, vivid memories of how awful that was that they didn't want the next one to happen. And Holt put together this book where he's saying, you know, it's interesting, he's saying, not everyone should eat bugs, the poor people should eat bugs. He's saying, you know, there are all these great meals for the wealthy, but their servants could be availing themselves of things like beetles and grasshoppers and what have you. He even is part of, this is sort of like a pamphlet, is part of his convincing people. He put together this little menu, several sample menus. There we have slug soup right at the top. He wasn't discriminating between slugs and bugs. Moth sautéed in butter, gooseberry cream with sawflies. In my own cookbook, there's actually a recipe I printed for those roly-polies, you know, those little
pill bugs,
in white sauce, whisking them into white sauce. And actually, it cracks me up, because if you know anything about the invertebrate kingdom, those roly-polies are actually related, not to insects, but to lobsters and crabs. So we're actually having land shrimp when you have those. Very tasty little guys. Okay, let me slide down a little bit further.
Are they tasty?
They are pretty good. Okay. Now, I've had my own banquets. Every year for the past 3 years, I think I'm taking a break this year, but we have the Feast of St. Gratus. St. Gratus was the patron saint of insect fear. So we have this feast, you know, four-course, five-course meal, all insect dishes. And it's held at Cafe Racer in Seattle. And this is a photograph from that. You can see that people are actually enjoying themselves.
Well, that doesn't look like a face that's enjoying.
Okay, and here's the cover of my original book. This book came out in 1998. The Eat a Bug Cookbook. It was actually the easiest book I've ever sold, and I've actually, right now I'm writing my 20th book. This one started out as a paragraph that I sent to an agent and said, here's what I'd like to do next. They forwarded that paragraph to a book publisher, and the book publisher said, great, we'll take it, but we need proof that this person has a minimum of 25 recipes, because that's what you need in a cookbook, right? So, 25 recipes. I started putting together a list. A lot of them were just bad puns, like pesto. Gravy salad was another one. I just was kind of like writing a list. I sent it off. They said, great, you're on. I signed the contract. Then I had to go, what is pesto? Work out these recipes. But in my cookbook, and I always love the food photographs, you know, they call this... they call this food porn. These are grasshopper kebabs. This recipe is called sheesh kebabs. And these are all taken by a gentleman in Port Townsend where I used to live. His name is Scott Stengem. Okay. Scorpion scallopini. These are branded scorpions. And these are desert hairy scorpions. Now notice if you look really closely, their stingers have been removed. In China, they eat scorpions. You can actually order a plate full of farm-reared scorpions.
Oh,
And in the Chinese case, the farm is like one of those plastic shoe containers that you put under the beds. So they actually do raise them, and you can eat smaller scorpions whole. But these are large scorpions. They're about 2 to 3 inches long. So I say take off the stinger with those. If you live in a family at Thanksgiving, people are always fighting over who gets the drumsticks of the turkey. Well, here you have a minimum of 28 drumsticks. Nice. So I call this recipe ample drumsticks. This photograph ran in the Los Angeles Weekly, their alternative paper, and the caption for it said, "Ooh, Brussels sprouts."
Crazy.
Okay. We eat bugs all the time, whether we know it or not. There actually are allowable standards set by the Food and Drug Administration for the numbers of bugs that can be in certain foods. It just stands to reason. If you're going to process tomatoes for a tomato ketchup, you're going to get some bugs in there or bug eggs or whatever. So they've set standards that say it's okay if a certain number of bugs are in there. More than that, I'm sorry, you have to reject the food. And this is true for jams and jellies, for peanut butter, for bean dishes, any of the coffee, any of those processed foods are bound to have bugs in them. Someone actually figured out with those limits, in a peanut butter and jelly sandwich, there can be 56 bug parts. So you've all been eating bugs. We're all alive to tell about it. So let's get over it. That's what it is. They actually did a study. The other day I mentioned about what kind of beer snails like best. Well, someone did a study which chocolate had the most bugs in it, naturally. I'm sure they got federal funding for this. And here's the winner.
Wow.
Reese's Peanut Butter Cups. Now, is that going to make people stop eating Reese's Peanut Butter Cups? I didn't think so. Because I'll tell you something, it's the bugs that are in there, they're actually the best part of the candy bar. I mean, what do you get when you eat candy? You get lots of sugar. You get fake additives. You get wax in chocolate. They put wax in it to stabilize it. What do you get when you eat bugs? You're getting all natural ingredients. You're getting lots of protein. They say pound for pound or ounce for ounce, the amount of protein in dried grasshoppers or lean ground beef is about the same. So if you have a quarter pounder hamburger or a quarter pound of grasshoppers, you're going to be getting the same benefits. Actually, you're going to be getting better benefits because in those grasshoppers, you get things like omega-3 fatty acids, the good fatty acids, not all the bad stuff that clogs your arteries. You get vitamins and minerals.
And fiber, too, I imagine.
Lots of fiber.
Yeah.
Roughage,
yeah.
But, you know, it's amazing. Crickets are really rich in calcium. I always like to tell women, if your fingernails are breaking or you're trying to ward off osteoporosis, eat more crickets. It works. Termites are really rich in iron. Instead of buying these multivites, just grab a fistful of crickets in one hand and a fistful of termites in the other, and away you go. Okay.
Give me a reason.
We eat all sorts of weird stuff. We don't think it's weird because we grew up with it. If our parents or our grandparents gave it to us, we think it's normal and everyone should have it. What? You don't like pig's feet? You know, it's that kind of thing. Chicken McNuggets.
Oh.
Weird food. But you know, we grew up with those, maybe. If you grew up in Japan, you'd be eating flying fish eggs. You'd be eating seaweed soup. You might have a sliced octopus. And you think that's something that everyone should have because you grew up with it. The one that I think is really hilarious, lobsters. Big gourmet item. When the pilgrims landed on Plymouth Rock, they were repulsed by the lobsters. They actually used them as fertilizer in their fields. I mean, there's big bugs crawling out of the tide pools. And in fact, up until about the 1940s, they used to serve this as prison food. I found a quote that was actually from a journal of one of the pilgrims from Plymouth Rock, who said, you know, the Smiths came over and we were so reduced as to have to eat lobsters. So, see, our own trends can change. And with clever marketing, like the Atlantic lobster became this thing that people spend $50 for right now. It's impossible to really predict food trends. Who would have thought that sushi was, you know, let's go out and spend lots of money on raw fish tonight. And I find sushi bars thousands of miles from the ocean, you know, right? The Midwest, they're everywhere because they're very trendy. Go and spend your paycheck on dinner.
Uh-oh.
What did I do?
Just go
down. I'm sorry.
Rick,
I don't
want
mean
to read that.
Yeah. At least it wasn't a personal message. All right. But personally, I think the weirdest food that we eat are chicken eggs. I won't even get into it because we have children in the audience. Where those eggs come from. There's actually a joke about this. Two cavemen are sitting around. One of them sees a bird, and he says, I know. See that bird? Let's pull off its head. Let's rip off its feathers and eat it. And the other guy says, no, no. Let's wait and see what comes out of its butt first. The chicken egg. Okay. If I said tomorrow we're all having turtle eggs for breakfast, you all would be grossed out, right? Because it's chicken eggs. Chicken eggs are good. Lizard eggs would be bad. It's like we're very specific about what we eat. It's kind of one of the fun parts I've had with going around and touring with this book is finding out, really pushing people's buttons about food in general. People have very strong feelings about food, and it's like religion or politics. You can get into fights with people over what state has the best barbecue or how do you make chili? You put beans in it? You're crazy. I sometimes get into fights with people before a show. They go, you're not going to eat that. And I have to say, well, actually, I'm going to cook it. You're going to eat it. But this is a great way to get into a fight with people. So for my new book, I just want to show you, you know, what's so weird about a chicken? What's so weird about a chicken egg? What's so weird about eating a tarantula spider, especially if it's paired nicely like this one, tempura battered, the hairs have been singed off of it, its abdomen is removed, it's served with smoked paprika. That's my whole thing, is finding really good ways to prepare these things. But also, and we're going to get into this in a little bit, I want people to be really aware of what they're eating. I don't want to masquerade this with thick sauces. Actually, I had grasshopper gumbo once. The gumbo was fantastic. You know, but the grasshoppers were in there too. I want people to be really aware of what they're eating because I'm on a mission to educate people about the food of the future. And as part of that mission, see now I'm paranoid every time I touch this button. There we go. Okay. Yes?
Yes.
Okay, now I get to go out and do all these cooking demonstrations. I started out in 1998 when the book was brand new. I was on Conan O'Brien, which was really a fun thing, right up to the point where I found out later that I made Conan throw up. Big brag right here.
Yeah.
I tried to call back the producer to have me back for a Thanksgiving special, all bug dinner, and he said, I really like the idea, but I don't think Conan's going to go for it. Okay, it's made me somewhat of a celebrity, and actually over the last several years I've become a really big celebrity, and it's not that uncommon to get a kind of a media frenzy. It's just odd enough. I say, it's just stupid enough for television. There's lots of, it's not me sitting in a chair talking about the Civil War. You know, boring. It's like, actual, there's a lot of actual interactivity, and people like that. So this was taken at Ripley's Believe It or Not in Hollywood. You know, there's all these people in Hollywood who are hanging around waiting to get a shot of Brad Pitt leaving the parking lot or whatever. Mm-hmm. It was a slow news day and they were all there taking pictures of me. Mm-hmm. I'm not the only one that gets into this. It's not that you. Okay, hello. Okay, these are actually chefs in a university in the Netherlands. They now have a completely integrated program for cooking with bugs. And I'm happy to point out, if you look closely on the table there, there's my cookbook. Yeah. Yay, went all the way across the pond. So, these guys are actually really onto a good thing. They're actually raising locusts and mealworms and crickets. And this is a facility. One of the advantages of raising bugs is you don't need all this pasturage and open space, or even those really large chicken coops you see. This could be in a little Quonset hut somewhere, and it actually could be raised locally. I'm waiting for Golden Village to add one of these. Because all you need is heat, basically, to keep the bugs warm. It's only a matter of time, folks.
Heat's a problem.
Yeah, heat is a problem, but it could be done, right?
Lentils and beetles.
Here they are making quiches with mealworms. The idea is they're not only raising their product, they're processing it, but they also have delis in places like that all over the Netherlands. They're carrying these foods. So they're, you know, wholly integrated in terms of their approach to introducing people to the food of the future. Okay, last year, the Food and Agriculture Organization of the UN came out with this report on edible insects. It's like a 180-page document. It's really big. Multiple authors, also founded in the Netherlands. And their message is, we couldn't possibly keep up with our populations growing as rapidly as they are. They're expecting another 1 billion people, that's a lot, in the next 40 years on our planet. And those people are actually adopting Western diets. We're a bad example in that respect. So even the traditional bug-eating cultures all want to have hamburgers. Well, we couldn't possibly raise that much cattle. It turns out that all of our arable land for pasturage for cattle is already taken. You know, if we want to clear some more of the rainforest, knock yourself out. But there's no way that they can keep up with that kind of demand for protein. And this UN report really, in a nutshell, is saying we need to start raising more insects and eating them. So yes, I've been vindicated. I was 16 years ahead of this report.
Yeah.
Okay. Here's the deal. Raising cattle like this is incredibly wasteful. It takes 16 pounds of grain to get 1 pound of meat. There are actually whole villages in Indonesia that could be floated on 16 pounds of grain. That would be a wonderful thing. But it's all going into these cattle. It also takes literally thousands of gallons of water. So there are actually a lot of people who are now looking seriously at insect culture in areas where water resources are in short supply. And that includes our own Southwest. But even more importantly than that, probably my favorite slide in the entire show. Cattle actually produce a lot of what turns out to be greenhouse gases, methane, ammonia, both through their flatulence and through their manure. You know, there are these enormous manure lagoons that they actually create. Well, those are emanating all these gases. They go up in the atmosphere. I don't know how much you understand about greenhouse gases, but they go up into the upper atmosphere. They form a layer up there, and like the glass panes in a greenhouse, they let the sun through, but they don't let the heat back out. So that's part of why we're having all these problems with climate change right now, is because we've created this barrier that's letting all the heat through solar energy in, but won't let it go back out. They say in studies, and I've seen different numbers on this, if they started raising grasshoppers large scale, instead of cattle, they could actually cut greenhouse gases by as much as 60%. Kind of amazing. All right. So, because of the UN report and just the kind of the growing trend, again, I can't predict food trends, it's become more and more of a deal. I've seen stories recently in the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Post, the New York Times, your Sierra magazine. They're all over the place right now. It's sort of like the big topic. And as we'll see in just a little bit, it's also inspiring a lot of people to get into this business. Well, it inspired my publisher to come out with a new, ritzier version of my cookbook. You know, if you think back to that original copy, it was kind of wacky looking. You know, there I am wearing a chef's hat cooking a spider. Now we're talking elegant. So, the illustrations for this book, done by my beloved bride, Karen Luke Files. some really good ones in there. And the photographs are spectacular. It's almost like dry British humor to me. Instead of being wacky, now it's really off the wall that it's humorous, but it's actually very serious stuff. So here's my favorite dish. This is called Orthopteran orzo. It's orzo pasta mixed with crickets. And I tell about this in my book. I actually did this program once in a botanical garden in Missouri. I had a kid come back for seconds, thirds, fourths, and fifths of this dish. And I kind of felt like W.C. Fields, like, you know, get out of here, kid, you bother me. And I said to him, don't they feed you at home? And he said to me, this is way better than anything my mom ever makes. A lot of times I have parents who say, I can't get my kids to eat anything. And here they are volunteering to try a scorpion scallopini or what have you. And I sort of go, well, you're probably not serving them interesting things at home. Because again, it also turns out that people who are exposed to lots of food choices are more likely to be adventurous. Okay, we're still kind of in a stage of novelty foods. One of these is a cricket lick-it lollipop. And the other one is a tequila-flavored sucker with a worm. Although the worm, you know, in tequila, first of all, it's in mezcal. It's not in tequila. It's actually a caterpillar. And in this one, they're using mealworms, which are baby beetles. But this company, Hotlicks, makes all sorts of stuff. They make larvette snacks in all sorts of flavors. But again, it's still, for most people, a novelty food. And things are starting to change. There's actually a company now called World Entomophagy. There's that big word for bug eating again. They're in Austin, Texas. They're keeping up with Austin's motto of keep Austin weird. And they're raising organic crickets for human consumption. We're not talking the bait and tackle shop here. We're talking about crickets that are raised expressly to be eaten by people. They're also making cricket flour. They bake the crickets. They grind them up into a flour that's very rich in protein. And you can mix that with your brownies or what have you, muffins. I'm expecting this at Holden Village any day. I just read that Central Co-op in Seattle is carrying their products now. Nice. And I actually brought samples of these. I know I threatened to serve everyone samples today. And these are Chapul energy bars. They come in three different flavors, and these are using that cricket flour. The people in Chapul live in Salt Lake City. They actually were inspired by water conservation. They wanted to come up with a product that could supplant our need for all this water-wasting beef or chicken or pork and come up with something more economical. And for those of you who like to watch TV, I'm kind of in the minority of not watching TV, but they were on the show Shark Tank and had an investor step forward and pony up $50,000 to help this company. So they're in good shape.
Energy bars, right?
That's right, like for hiking.
Cool.
All right, the other company, Six Foods, they're getting a lot of publicity. These are Harvard graduates. They had a Kickstarter funding project and they actually raised $70,000 to make what basically are going to be like corn chips, tortilla chips, made with cricket flour. So there's a bug in your future, whether you know it or not. All right. My last slide, this is hypothetical, but someday fast food could look like this. And why shouldn't it? You know, fast food does not have a great rap. It kind of cracks me up that when I give programs, there are people in the audience who prefer eating what is called pink slime. Are you familiar with that? That's what McDonald's uses in their products. Basically, they're exposing chicken carcasses after they've removed the meat to get every last scrap of protein. They expose it to a really caustic acid solution. They get this kind of, well, it's pretty gross stuff, needless to say. But it's like, I don't want to know. As long as it's chicken, I'm good with it. And we actually have to suffer with the fact that we're not willing to try something that 80% of the world's cultures is trying. Okay. So I did bring samples of some Chapul energy bars, two flavors. I need to caution you all that the Chapul bars, if you're allergic to lobsters or shrimp or crab, you might have an allergic reaction to eating bugs. That's probably the only drawback. People who went to the Red Lobster and had all-you-could-eat shrimp feeds and then felt itchy or had a hard time breathing might have that same reaction from these products. But I've actually been doing these programs for 16 years. I've probably encountered about 4 or 5 people who have that severe allergy. So I'm pretty safe in handing these out. So I'm going to challenge you all to, yes, step right up and help yourselves. We have Thai flavored bars, and we also have dark chocolate and chili spiced bars, cut into little bits. Whatever we don't eat right here, I'm going to bring right across the way and offer for alternatives for dinner
dessert.
Snacks, right, for dessert. But before we do that, questions, anyone? Yeah.
So your two cookbooks, the first and the second edition, they have different recipes?
You know, my first book had 33 recipes in it. The second book, it's a revised edition of the first book. So it has 40 recipes in it. A few of them dropped out. In the first book, I put in a lot of cockroach recipes because I wanted to separate the men from the boys. It's one thing to eat a cricket, another thing to eat a cockroach, even if they've been raised in exactly the same circumstances, but people have such weird feelings about cockroaches. And I took two of them out.
Okay.
And I added a few
more. He doesn't like the way they taste.
Yeah, I don't think they're that good. But they were a challenge. And I also have to tell you, I do get from people nowadays, some of the young people who are trying these new products, that, you know, I'm kind of like being over the top by having people eat whole insects. That process, I think probably the way of the future is processed insects, because people have such weird attitudes. We don't want to eat something that's looking back at us, basically. And so some of the new recipes are a little easier to deal with. If you ever order fish in a Chinese restaurant, a whole fish, and they bring it out at the table, everyone stares at it. We're not used to seeing whole animals. And then the waiter comes over and deftly cuts it up, and then you can begin your food. So I think that some of the newer recipes are a little less, we say, strident in the new book. But basically, all I did was update it, add a few recipes, drop a few recipes, and repackage it. I stand by what I said in the first book.
Yeah. Are there bugs that you can't eat?
Yes, there are bugs that you can't eat. And it's not so much, well, most bugs that you don't want to eat go out of their way to tell you so.
Like
those are the really brightly colored ones. Ladybugs, for example. Bright red with black spots. In the animal kingdom, that's actually the language of, don't eat me, I don't taste good.
Like poison dart frogs.
Yeah, exactly, like poison dart frogs. Because if you taste good, you're going to want to blend in and hide, look like a brown or a green or a black insect. And if you don't, you're going to broadcast, stay away from me. I actually just did a program for, there's a new movie coming out called The Box Trolls. It's an animated film. It looks really good from the coming attractions. And the box trolls live underground. They come out at night and forage in a city. But they live underground and they eat bugs. So they hired me at San Diego Comic-Con to operate a food truck and serve bugs. We served 1,200 people in 2 days. Grasshopper kebabs and waxworm quesadillas and things. Well, the producers, not knowing a lot about bugs, said, well, could you serve ladybugs? And can you serve millipedes? First of all, I have to say, I'm probably one of the only people who has email correspondence like that. But I was like cracking up because ladybugs, I said, ladybugs don't taste good. And millipedes actually secrete cyanide from their legs. Like if you're handling one, go wash your hands afterwards. So no, I don't think I'm going to be serving those dishes. So it's kind of a weird correspondence.
So it's good to get the book, right?
Yes, it's good to get the book.
And you're not going to just go out in the yard and catch some crickets?
Thank you for prompting me. Because I do have this guideline. I say, first of all, don't eat raw bugs. You know, I wrote a cookbook, not a foraging guide. Even people who have survival training know you have to cook the bugs with your little fire starting kit before you eat them. There's a guy who was shot down behind enemy lines in Bosnia and lived for 2 weeks, I think, eating beetles. But he used a lighter to cook them. The other thing is, don't harvest bugs from your backyard. And I say that because we use pesticides a lot. Even if you're an organic farmer, there's no guarantee that two doors down they're not. If the bugs are eating pesticides and you're eating the bugs, you're becoming what they call a bioaccumulator. Those pesticides stay with us in our fat cells, and over time, it can make you really sick. So you need to get either far enough away from humankind, like my scorpions come from the Sonoran Desert, where I don't think they're spraying pesticides, or buy them from places where they've been raised expressly to be eaten. And that could include places like Petco or PetSmart or any pet store. Those guys are being raised, the crickets and mealworms they sell there are actually being raised to feed things like $1,000 chameleons. So they have to be in really good shape before they're served as well. So thank you, Karen, for reminding me to put out those caveats. Anybody else?
These guys are ready to eat bugs.
I say, let's go and eat some bugs. So I'm going to pass these plates around.
Can we try one of each?
Yes, you can try one of each. I love adventurous eaters, by the way. So thank you for being eager to try. Here, I'm going to let you start by passing these around.
Which ones are those?
The mayor has to have them first. The ones on the outer ring, those are the chocolate and cayenne ones, and the center ones are the Thai bars that are.
Which ones are not spicy?
The ones in the center, okay. Less spicy.
The chocolate ones are not spicy.
Yeah, that's right. It's a lot more palatable if they don't look like bugs. Even if they are bug shaped, I think people might have no bugs. Here you go. Well, my word is bug appetit, so enjoy yourself. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
So, you talked about pet stores.
Yeah.
You could go in, I don't know.
Well, a place like Petco or PetSmart or any large pet store usually carries things like crickets, mealworms, and my personal favorite are wax worms, which are little caterpillars about this big. They're actually a moth caterpillar. And in the wild, they actually lay their eggs on a honeycomb of a beehive. That's why they call them wax worms. They hatch out, the caterpillars eat the wax from the honeycomb.
So I could go there and say, oh, can I have half a pound of
them? Well, that's the only problem is they're expensive, comparatively. Then if you actually, like I buy 1,000 crickets at a time.
Right.
And I'll actually order them either from World Entomophagy, they're like recipe ready.
You should like order them online and they
yeah.
And they're,
that's right.
And they're dead.
Really yeah, they're dead in packaging.
Well, yeah, he also works in the wine trade because we get crickets on our doorstep. Thank you. UPS brings
from a cricket farm.
I like the Thai bar.
Let's leave that one. I know you're